free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net. And if you're listening live, you can see the phone number there for call-in. We do ask if you could wait till the end of the show to call in for any questions you might want to ask. Our guest today, Todd Hathaway, comes to us halfway between Bob Boyd's place and his place. He's been hanging out at Bob Boyd's, is doing a replication and working on some prototyping there. He's got a hydroxy technology several times over the Faraday supposed limit of what's possible with electrolysis. Bob Boyce is one of the premier experimenters on the planet in this technology. Todd will be talking to us about that, as well as some upcoming new energy technology events that he's been involved in organizing. And he's also been involved in trying to endeavor to identify working technologies of the exotic sort to include at those events and to bring to the attention of various people he's in connection with in Washington, D.C., which is where he resides. So, Todd, you come to us wearing a number of different hats today. We'd like to address each one of those things a little bit, primarily talking about the Bob Boyce electrolyzer. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
You're on your way back to Washington, D.C.?
Yep. I'm in Virginia now, headed back. Had a few phone calls this morning with folks that are going to be at that booster rally on the 17th at Jarboe's Mill in Charlotte Hall, Maryland. So they're getting all excited about that event.
Tell us about that. It's a good place to start.
Okay. As has been discussed in the Yahoo groups that the New Energy Congress members are involved with, the booster technology really isn't anything new, and it's so well documented that an event like this doesn't break new ground, but in the D.C. area, people seem to be undereducated on what booster units can do to improve mileage. And there will be like two or three vehicles driven for the event, not that big an event, looks like, but that will be enough to show people that booster units of various configurations can go into different vehicles, and they will all improve mileage. Obviously, there's some out there that work better than others, but one of the three units or two units that will be demonstrated will be one of Bob Boyce's open source designs, which is a 60-cell unit, and that will be driven on conventional DC. It's a BW Rabbit truck. Larry Jarboe's driving. They'll be using that unit. And another gentleman that's like in the hydroxy groups, he posts his name under electric, I think. He'll be driving in the event. And a couple other people are driving in the service driver since it's supposed to be an overnight, nonstop rally of sorts. So once that's completed, I believe they're going to head out to Bob Boyce's place and check out the resonance drive unit that he and I have been working on for the past month. Hello?
So is he going to have something ready for the this Jarboe's Mill? Because I understood that there was a bit of a delay in getting things pulled together.
Well, Bob Boyce won't be in the event himself. He's taking care of some medical issues with his wife, so he won't be attending. But Larry Jarboe has a very similar design compared to the 100-cell units that we're building now. And under just conventional electrolysis, it performs in the same manner, and it produces more than enough gas for a booster unit. So even a 60-cell is more than adequate for this type of an event.
Describe briefly the setup of a hydrogen or hydroxy booster.
Okay. Well, I could just describe the 100-cell units, if that's what we're working on. Each cell is identical, either 316 or 317 alloy stainless steel plates are used, and space in between the plates in our unit is 1/8 of an inch, and each unit is about 2 volts when it's in operation, and so the total unit is around 200 volts, obviously. Nothing too esoteric is going on with the conventional booster configuration. You just hook up a positive and negative on each end of the unit, and the solution is an aqueous solution of roughly 20% potassium hydroxide, which serves as the electrolyte carrier for the charge. And you can just dial up however much gas, hydroxy gas you want based on the amperage and voltage. So it's pretty straightforward, nothing new there. It's just a very efficient design, and we tested out his unit while I was down there a couple days ago, just brute force, and it was producing roughly 150% Faraday's output. So that's more than adequate for a booster rally.
So. Now, in terms of plugging this into a car, you're producing this hydrogen-oxygen mixture off the top of this electrolysis unit. What are you doing with that?
That's pretty straightforward as well. The hydroxy gas flows to the top, and just the pressure buildup from producing it, you have an outlet so that it's directed through a bubbler. You know, it cleans the water up a little bit. You can even do a second bubbler with a filter so that once it makes it into the engine, it's free of any corrosive leftovers. So it's just clean burning hydroxy gas at that point. And the only thing you'd have to change periodically if you were to maintain it for an extended period is the filter that goes in the second filter unit. And you can get a couple of those for just a few bucks. So the corrosiveness issue that folks like at DOE that have brought up when presented with this technology, it's kind of a moot point because it's easy to keep that away from the engine.
What about backflash? What are you doing to prevent the gas, if you had an ignition going back, to explode your electrolysis unit?
Simple check valve takes care of it. You've got, in the first bubbler, you have a 2 pound roughly is where we have our check valve set up, but it can be as low as 0.5 pound, such that it just allows the air through, and then any time that reverses, it'll close right up. You know, that's what a check valve does.
You say there's a triple check valve, so you have three.
It's just one in the first bubbler. The second filter unit, you have an intake, and it goes through a tightly wrapped material. It could be paper or plastic, you know, whatever it takes that will filter out any material so that the outlet is strictly gas. And in this case, hydroxy gas is something else.
Now, on the circuitry end of things, if I understand correctly, Bob Boyce is using some kind of a resonance effect. Maybe you could describe what that's about.
Sure. He's got three phases that are activated, and the circuitry is set up so that the three phases are frequencies 10.7, 21.4, and 42.8 kilohertz. And I guess that's ideal for water because it sets up a standing wave within these cells at that spacing such that the center of the cell, as well as spacing halfway between the center on each side, the standing wave efficiently dissociates the water into hydroxy gas. And it's not just diatomic oxygen and hydrogen. Some of it's monatomic hydrogen and ionized hydrogen and oxygen gas. So you get a pretty good bang for your buck. And he actually, Bob Boyce had an earlier unit, like from like 15 years ago when he was playing around with this initially, had it tested at a local college for the content, and he was picking up ortho, para hydrogen as well as monatomic hydrogen, and somehow it stabilized when it's produced this way for at least a little while. And since it's on demand, you only need it stable for just a few seconds because you burn it right away. And that eliminates the need for storage.
How chemically or electromagnetically, how are they detecting monatomic hydrogen and oxygen? Because the scientists would tend to poo-poo the idea of hydrogen or oxygen existing as monatomic anything for more than a nanosecond.
Right. Well, those were the results. And it was a while back when he did this, so since I'm at University of Maryland, when I get a unit to bring to D.C., that's a question I'm going to answer by testing the gas ourselves when we have it on campus. We'll just produce it on demand and test it right away to see what the signatures are. And, you know, that'll be proof positive for us. So until that happens, it'll be pretty tough to prove it to anybody. It's just typical grass gas chromatography that'll be utilized for the testing.
When you talk about this hydroxy gas, the name coming from hydrogen and oxygen,
sure.
Commonly ducted, is that synonymous with Brown's gas?
I don't think so. There seems to be a wide range of the gas that is produced depending on which unit is producing it. So I don't know where you really draw the line between Brown's gas and hydroxy gas produced from a Boyce unit, because there are various units that produce combustible gas in various ratios of the hydrogen, oxygen ions and monatomic structures. So again, you'd have to just test out each unit individually to determine what their signatures are, and then you could compare it.
A lot of people have seen that video about Denny Klein and their technology, hydrogen technologies, where the television program makes it sound like they're driving the car across the country on this gas that they're producing through their electrolysis, which is really, I think, a bit, the presentation was not scientifically presented. It was a news crew talking about something they didn't know what they were talking about. Obviously, the hydroxy gas coming off is assisting. It's not the primary source of power for the vehicle.
Right.
And so in your experience firsthand, what kind of improvement have you seen when cars are fitted with these hydroxy units on the low end and on the high end?
Well, actually, my experience, first-hand experience, is rather limited. I haven't worked with booster technology myself, but I work with a network of researchers who have. Improvements seem to be substantial, and the Boyce unit in particular has nearly doubled mileage when set up for semis in a tractor trailer. So I'm sure truckers probably don't appreciate the fact that the EPA blocked, essentially, the implementation of this technology so that they could virtually double their mileage. Other units probably improve mileage slightly, very few, more than 50% from what I've come across. So it can be installed on any vehicle if you configure it for it.
There's a number of avenues that we read about on the internet of people who are doing this technology. There are some commercial ventures who we don't get a lot of news about, but in terms of advertising, you'll see this water for gas ads showing up all over the place. For $100, you get some plans of how to source materials locally, cheaply, to build one of these electrolysis units, put in your car to improve your mileage. Another one you see is a guy's charging around $50 for a kit. There's a number of iterations of this. Then you can buy a kit completely ready to go with some other supplemental things as well for in the range of $800 to $1,000. So there's a whole gamut of things that are out there. Boyce doesn't have anything planned or kit-wise or completed unit-wise yet, does he?
For boosters, it's open source, so other people, like Larry Jarboe, he's an example. On the 17th, he's going to demonstrate live his booster unit on the VW Rabbit truck that he configured it for. And I'll be setting up a live internet feed like from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern time before they take off on the 17th. I believe it's a Thursday. So that's coming up in a couple days, and people can ask the same sorts of questions and call in with questions as well. So there's one example of an open source technology that's working for boosters. That,
so
he
took the plans
officer.
Off the internet, and he built one of these, and it's the design put forth by Bob Boyce.
Who built it? Larry
Jarboe.
Yeah, I don't know where he got the 60 cell unit. I think he just bought it off eBay, and then got the steel plates, put it in there, and configured his Rabbit for it. So it's up and running now, and he actually had his mechanic check it out, and this mechanic was familiar with how the truck was running before, and he said the emissions are all cleaned up. It's running smoothly compared to how it was running before the booster unit was installed. So there's obviously plenty of use for this now that we're all concerned about pollution and global warming or climate change, which is how it should be titled.
How did you establish a before baseline before installing the cells?
We'll have to ask Larry Jarboe and the other guys. Plus, there's a lot of other information out there. Like from the Yahoo groups, Mark Danzy has mentioned that there's a lot of information he's come across. And it'd be great if he could post that, just some summarized results that aren't, you know, tucked away under an NDA for nobody to benefit from. And then we could compare that. But I guess the best way is just to drive your vehicle around before and after for an extended period and notice the difference. And we'll see what they have. I'm assuming they've been doing that with the vehicles that are installed with the boosters. They've taken stats on the type of mileage it normally gets. And if you see a substantial increase, then the obvious conclusion is that the boosters, you know, having a positive impact on mileage.
Now, let's go back to the question about the resonance. You're talking about these 10.2, 21.4, 42.8 kilohertz. Is that superimposed continuously, or is that the rate at which, is it a pulse scenario where they're hitting the cells with this frequency DC differential? Or how is that working?
Yeah, it's superimposed is the best way to describe it. It sets up a standing wave within each cell in between the steel plates. And within that one-inch thickness, you get the three peaks, the largest one in the middle, and then two halfway between the midpoint and the steel plate surfaces. And those are the points at which the water dissociates into the gas.
So could you say that the reason that he's exceeding Faraday, what Faraday said would be the limit for electrolysis, the reason they're exceeding that is because they are hitting the molecule with a frequency that makes the breaking of the bonds easier. Thereby, they're able to get 150 times the efficiency, or 150%, 1.5 times the efficiency of Faraday.
Well, we're crossing wires a little bit. When you talk about resonance, that has nothing to do with the boosters. The resonance drive configuration is for full-blown magnitude beyond what boosters would be producing with the same type of voice unit. That's just a DC, you're pumping in the current, and that's conventional electrolysis for the booster configuration. When you use resonance drive and you're hooking up a toroidal coil to the electronics design, that is an entirely separate technology using the same 100 cell unit. And the gas you produce has more energy, which means more monatomic and high energy ionic hydrogen oxygen gas than you would find with just the booster unit. And again, sit down and, you know, measure it, I'm just parroting what Bob has researched over the years.
As you mentioned earlier, a hydroxy gas has a shelf life of very short duration. And so what is their application if they're not going to be dumping it right into an engine?
Well, that's of the most energetic ion. Like if you just set it on the shelf for a couple days, it would lose some of its punch, but it's still very combustible. It still has a lot of energy. If you want to store it, then just store it, you know, like you would normal hydrogen gas. And you may even be able to adapt some of the hydrogen vehicles for this simply by plugging it in. I don't think you'd have to do a whole lot else. Timing should be very similar for ignition.
Well, my understanding of the hydroxy gas is it is highly combustible because it's a perfect stoichiometric mixture of the hydrogen and oxygen, just ready to go boom. And it is another member of the New Energy Congress calls it boom gas.
Correct.
So it would be different than hydrogen in that regard.
I'm not interested in storing hydroxy gas. I want to produce it on demand so that you can run vehicles without any other fuel input. And we have four Toyota Priuses available for this particular configuration, simply as proof of concept. We're not going into production. We're not going to set up a company and make lots of money or patent it, and then, which it can't be since it's already been published all over the internet. This isn't a money issue. All this resonance-based technology, that is solely serving as a purpose to prove the concept of advanced energy in general, where you can tap into what is often referred to as longitudinal energy and convert it into energy for a practical use. And water is simply the carrier of that energy. And when you set up the standing waves, the water soaks it up by dissociating into hydroxy gas. And it gets pretty complicated if you want to explain it much beyond that, because you're screwing around with quantum mechanics and all sorts of fields of science that I'm not as familiar with.
On the face of it, does it appear to be defying present laws of physics, or is it just not having applied the proper laws appropriately?
Well, it certainly doesn't break any laws if it happens. I think our understanding of what's happening within the resonance configuration, there's just a lack of understanding throughout the scientific community. And if we have to build it first, half a dozen units, you know, distribute those for independent validation, then people can start working on the why, because it seems to be pretty complicated to try and theorize it and then build it based upon that theory. But Bob Boyce has built these in the past, like, you know, 15 years ago past. He had some interference and just shied away from it for a while, and then decided to just, you know, set up a Yahoo group or whatever and post information on the internet so that other people could continue where he left off. But I didn't feel like waiting around for other people to get it right, so decided to just work with him directly on this project. And I've only been involved with it for about a month. There are other projects out there, but those won't be demonstrated until the end of June at the earliest. And they use other configurations like Stan Myers and Herman Anderson's technology is something that James Allen Robey's working on. So he may or may not have something available by the end of June when we hold that Alternative Energy Partnership Conference in Charlotte Hall at Jarboe's Mill. It's on a weekend, like June 28th and 29th. So information will be posted through various forums online and on web pages so that through the grapevine, everybody will find out what's going on and get an idea of the technologies that will be there. There are probably a dozen other researchers scattered throughout North America that are considering presenting some information on their energy technologies as well as healing technologies.
That's this Alternative Energy Partnership Conference, June 28th to 29th?
Yes.
That's
normally scheduled where, you know, everybody will show up, but we'll have some of the technology set up in advance, and we'll also be doing demonstrations following the event, because a lot of officials and influentials in the D.C. area may not be available that weekend, so we'll carry it over as needed so that the appropriate parties can witness these technologies firsthand. And again, some are open source, you know, anybody can work on them, and others are strictly to attract investors.
We've talked about the Bob Boyce technology. Let's talk now about this, and we've also talked about this hydrogen booster contest coming up here on the 17th and 18th.
Yeah.
It's this coming Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Alternative Energy Partnership Conference. Jarboe's Mill, where is that?
It's in Charlotte Hall, Maryland, which is about half an hour south of the D.C. Beltway on the Maryland side, obviously. And directions are posted on green-salon.com. And Larry Jarboe is hosting the event. And he's made his cell phone number available if people need directions to find it. So you just take Highway 5 pretty much the whole way down. And again, if people have trouble finding it on their way there, they just call.
And this is an event that's free to the public?
Yes, free to the public, free to presenters. No one needs to RSVP. Spaces are not reserved. There's plenty of space, so exhibits will be set up as people arrive. And there's even a flea market just right across adjacent to his mill. So thousands of people will be in the area that weekend. And God only knows how many people are going to show up. I really don't know. Because it's like a Woodstock, you know, you can't really determine in advance who's going to show up. You can just get a ballpark idea of how excited people are about it. And right now, I think a lot of people are beginning to realize that some technologies that haven't been presented recently for various reasons will be presented at this event. And the event itself will also serve as a trigger for even more advanced energy and healing technologies, because we're combining this into one. We want those to become public knowledge so that people can begin benefiting from this, rather than just have this remain strictly within the academic and scientific community, because that doesn't really benefit our nation at all.
So when you talk, it sounds to me like it's going to be a very loosely organized in terms of scheduling. There's not going to be a list of speakers at such and such time, but
no, it's like a flea market where people show up and, you know, they have their particular items to sell, and other people show up and buy them. And as long as the word gets out, a lot of people show up. That's how it works. And that's what we're doing with this one. And normally flea markets actually cost the people selling goods money, but for this event, it's too important to charge, and it'll also be videotaped as well as live internet feed throughout that weekend. So if people don't feel like driving cross country, they can just log on to their computer and watch it live. And there will be some interaction with internet viewers for that event, because they could call in. We'll provide a couple phone numbers for people to call in. And there's also on the live feed, you could do chat. So
how's that going to work, though, with a live internet feed where you've got so many things going on and you've got one camera? trained on one location. Are you going to have numerous cameras and
numerous cameras? Yeah, like we've talked about the Justin.tv, and I'll go and spell it out so people can look it up. JUSTIN.tv. That's the entire web address to access how to set up your own live internet feeds. Anybody with a laptop can do this. And we're going to have three or four live feeds set up simultaneously for this event. And all you need is a Sprint or Verizon wireless broadband internet card and a laptop with a camcorder or a video camera hooked up to it. And it will show how easy it is to use on Thursday when I do the 3 to 5 p.m. interview with the couple of guys who are going to bring their vehicles to this event. And we'll get feedback on how to improve it. You know. So that by the end of June, we're going to have it set up as well as it can be. And there will also be videotape footage so that if, for whatever reason, people can't log in while it's live, they can just go back later to, you know, like Google Video or YouTube and download it or watch it there.
The feed that's carried over Justin TV, is that also recorded into an archive?
Apparently, because I beta tested it at an Energy Conversation event in Arlington when I believe it was Amory Levins was the speaker for that one. And I set it up to record, and it was live footage, but it also recorded like 2 hours worth of talk. So it works. The quality of the feed strictly dependent on the bandwidth. And at that event, the bandwidth was pretty low. So if the same is the case for this one, then the videotape footage will have to suffice where people can just log in later and, you know, watch it on the internet that way.
What kind of local internet?
What's that?
What kind of local internet is available for people who want to set up their own feeds?
The wireless card's pretty much it out there. Larry said that whoever it was, I think Comcast was going to charge him like over $1,000 just to drop a line there, so he decided against that one. So he may still do it. I'm going to talk to him on Thursday and see if it's willing. We'll see.
If that's not there, then what kind of internet connection? Is it an unsecured, or do you have to have a password to get in to a secured line?
Well, the Justin.tv, anybody with an internet connection can just click on the link for it and watch it live.
About the presenters who are there at the conference. What kind of output, what kind of connection are they going to have to be able to broadcast?
Yeah. They would need one of the wireless broadband internet cards that you can plug into a laptop at any location. And it's like a cell phone, but the bandwidth is higher. So they could do it that way. That's how we're going to report it. There may also be some television stations coming out since it's local to D.C., I actually expect that, but I'm not gonna guarantee it. Again, this is a pretty loose-knit group putting this together right now, so we'll see as we get closer, you know, what specific will be available for that.
In terms of the venue, what kinds of security are you going to be able to have at night as people leave their booths? Are they going to be taking their wear with them? Or are they going to leave their stuff there with security to watch over it?
There will be overnight security for the event. They're welcome to take it with them, but if it's just too cumbersome to take apart at night, we'll have people there just standing watch to ensure nobody steals it or does anything stupid.
So this is basically a free-for-all, if you've got a working technology, bring it and show it off and let people see it type of event, flea market.
That aspect, yes. Yeah. I mean, flea markets are organized events, as will this one be, but we're not, you know, there's no deposit required and people aren't forced to show up if they said, yes, I'll be here for this particular booth. That's not how it'll work. People will show up over the course of, you know, the few days before. Some will show up day of, or maybe even on Sunday, and we'll set things up as needed. We'll have everything we need to ensure that people can set up whatever they have available.
Now, are you going to draw the line in terms of if something's too conventional, it's not welcome, like somebody's bringing a solar panel or somebody's bringing a wind turbine? Is there going to be any...
Anything that will minimize our need for conventional hydrocarbon fuels is welcome at the event. And on the healing side, those technologies, anything that would eliminate the need for conventional drugs or therapies and hospitalizations, those are welcome at the event.
What have you done in terms of putting out the invitation for people to show up to this thing?
Word of mouth, internet, business cards, flyers, sort of thing. Like, University of Maryland had an event for global climate change, and like 5,000 students showed up from all over the country for that, and that was pretty word of mouth, just loosely organized. There's a lot of sponsorship, but in our case, that really won't be necessary because we don't have any expenses to incur beyond just setting up the exhibits, and those are the expenses that we're not going to charge presenters for at all.
So is there
whatever they need?
Describe the booth or whatever that somebody will have if they come with the technology.
We'll have enclosed spaces, tables, chairs. The live internet feeds will have 3 or 4 laptops set up for that. And video recording equipment, we'll have that there. Food and drinks, lodging, that's up to the individuals. Obviously, we can't cover that for everybody. But
I know when a person is anticipating doing a booth at any conference, the cost just for the table and the chairs and the drape can run $50 to $300, and you're going to cover all that cost?
Yes, because we already have the equipment available in the D.C. area through our network, who will be supporting the event.
Okay. What about electricity? Does each booth have its own plug, 2 or 3?
We'll set it up as needed. Jarbo has plenty of electricity for the event, so we'll just grab extension cords and route them out to the locations where the booths will be set up.
What about a team on hand to validate the technology? Let's say somebody's got a 1 kilowatt unit and it takes, 500 watts to get it running on the input side. Is there going to be some measurement equipment on hand to validate input versus output energy requirements and supply?
Yeah, there will be some equipment and specific equipment for that, I'm not sure yet, but just the basic stuff, to measure DC, AC input and output, depending on what it is they're producing. If it's hydroxy gas, you measure the volume. If it's just strict electricity, then you can measure the output through conventional means. Certain loads with, certain wattage, as well as equipment that just simply measures what it's producing.
Are you going to be turning anyone away because they're too weird?
No. No, it's up to them if they want to look stupid. It's like a person's resume. You show up with something, and that represents your work. So if you show up with something that's just ridiculous, then needless to say, you probably wasted your own time by coming to the event. But it's always interesting to see what shows up. But the main
focus is to bring several
advanced energy technologies, as well as healing technologies, and then what I'll call the best of class. That's what our network within DC will pursue as far as scaling up for production. For the simple reason, why would you want to scale the second or third best technology for production? Yeah.
How many booth spots are you going to have?
There could be up to 20, so we'll see how many show up. Right now, I'm guessing about 15 to 20 will probably show up. And again, that's indoor. You can have outdoor setups, and that's virtually unlimited. And if you're driving a vehicle to demonstrate, then you know, the vehicle's enclosed unless it's a golf cart, so that's a non-issue.
Okay, so when you talk about having up to 20 booths, obviously you're talking about a on the outset, the what sets this apart is that it's more geared toward exotic technologies, because if you were talking about a mainstream event, those 20 booths would be filled up in a microsecond.
Sure. That's right. Yeah,
so
because you have conferences and events that cover conventional energy and health-related technologies all the time, so I don't see any need for that. There are very few events that cover the advanced stuff, and virtually none of them are free to the public, so it certainly made sense to pursue that avenue since there's an enormous demand for that information as well as the technology.
Okay. What about bathroom facilities? What do you have planned that way to cover the, in case you get overwhelmed with people, or what kind of your start off point, and do you have plans for contingencies in case you get a lot more people than what you were planning? I was just asking about the facilities in terms of the bathroom facilities. Is that
Yeah, that's where I got caught off. There'll be porta potties. Larry said he's going to provide that as needed. And there's, with the flea market, there are porta potties for that, and that's just within walking distance, like a couple hundred feet away from this event. Plus, there are restaurants in the area, so facilities for everybody will be available as needed.
Okay. And how are you going to get the word over to the other flea market to let them know there's something next door? Will the organizers of that event allow you to cross-pollinate in your advertising or announcements?
Larry Garbo's in contact with the gentleman that's in charge of that, so that's a non-issue. As far as the people that show up to the flea market, we can just hand out flyers. That was the plan. Just walk through and let people know what's going on right across from them. And I can't imagine, you know, having a lot of people adjacent to a flea market would be a bad thing for the person organizing the flea market, because that just means more people will probably be walking over there to look at the stuff.
What kind
but
of
again,
technology
go ahead.
Do you know that are planning on coming that would pique our interest in terms of wanting to make the trip?
As far as which technology?
Yeah, what kind of technologies are planning on coming at this point?
Well, let's see. There's gentlemen up in Alaska that will have one or two vehicles running on a chemical cell that's just burning, well, converting water to combustible gas, if not burning it. And then another gentleman up in Canada grabbed one of the boys' units. He's going to see if he can get that one up and running, and he'll present that at the end of June as part of the independent validation. And he's also working on Stan Meyer's technology, and he'll have that installed on one of his pickup trucks, if he can get it working by the end of June. Who else? Kevin West wants to get a truck. He's been working to secure enough money to finish that one. Eddie Steins has some cool stuff he's working on out in Manassas, Virginia, so he may or may not have something ready for that. That's more along the lines of just strictly electromagnetic superconductivity. Doesn't involve water. Just liquid nitrogen as an energy carrier. What else?
Eddie Stein, one of the top 100 energy technologies, is a promising concept.
Yeah. They can just go to the top100energy.com and take a look at his and everybody else's that the New Energy Congress has been reviewing. I'm under NDA, so I'm not going to provide excruciating detail, but enough information has been posted for people to get a pretty good idea of what Eddie's working on. So he's been making a lot of progress. There's so many components that have to go together for that technology to work out. He's just about has it finished up, so hats off to him for doing that. James Allen Robey is also working on converting a vehicle to run on Herman Anderson's technology, and he has all the materials and funding he needs for that. So it's just a question of how long it'll take him to break the code on that. And there are a couple others that are represented by Advanced Energy Research Organization that excellent. Who is it?
Caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, this is James Robey with the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum.
We were just talking about you.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I haven't been able to hook up with you yet. I have a guy visiting here with a Joe cell, and we got so carried away in conversation, I lost track of time.
Go ahead. Tell us about how that's working out.
Well, I recently received a communication from a gentleman from Iowa, and he received an exact copy of the Joe cell that was made by Bill Williams. And so he brought it, and it's sitting in my basement right now, and we've been doing some testing with it. So it's sort of an interesting story. I don't know how to take it all, but I don't know. You all are familiar with those details, I suppose?
Yeah, I published that story on my site a couple of years ago.
Okay, well, this gentleman has an exact replica made by Bill Williams. Apparently, he made two of the cells at the time he made the one. He made another. And so that's what we're tinkering with right now.
When you say tinkering with, is it...
how's the Herman Anderson conversion going?
Yeah, that's something that has been ongoing now for, you know,
James?
a couple years. But thanks to Todd, we're giving renewed impetus into having something ready for this June. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can
hear you. So we're testing the parameters of the Herman Anderson system, because although in the video interview that Herman did with the Middle Tennessee State University professor 12 years ago, he revealed a lot of information, but there's a lot of things he didn't reveal.
Hello?
Hello, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm here.
I don't know if you can hear me. I can't hear anything on my end, so I'll just let you all talk. So
I can hear you.
There we go. I just heard you. Okay.
Okay, there you go. So anyway, we're just trying to test the parameters of what works and what doesn't work, because it's a rather large cell. It's about 14 inches in diameter, so it won't fit under the hood of many cars now. And so we're trying to see if we can reduce the size of it and get it to run a smaller sized engine. Most vehicles these days use smaller engines than what was in the 1971 LTD that he had it installed in. So that's part of what we're doing, just trying to sort of feel around the whole technology to get it to work sufficiently well to run especially a smaller vehicle. And that, you know, or will actually fit under the hood.
We were talking about this Alternative Energy Partnership Conference coming up near D.C. on June 28th, 29th, and that you were planning on coming with, if you have it ready on time, the Herman Anderson technology. How's that looking to be ready to go for that?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're working on. I'm just taking a little bit of a vacation today with the Joe cell coming into town. This is sort of a unique opportunity to actually have a hands-on, you know, he invited me to take the thing apart, which there really wasn't much point in disassembling it all together, but it does come apart, and, you know, it's sort of a mysterious device, the way that they claim that it works. But,
yeah, that one is not an electrolysis scenario. Apparently, there's some other energy going on, and the engine, the thing actually runs the engine entirely. The fuel line's supposed to be able to be disconnected altogether, and it's not running on water. The water's not actually being consumed to make the engine turn. There's some other force going on, really weird stuff.
Well, that's what we've been discussing. There are a lot of things that happen in nature that are hard to understand, and in fact, just before I realized I needed to call you and I ran up here, we were discussing how many things in life happen on a level of parts per million. And so there is a lot of, even radiation, it's something that you can't detect, and yet it does have a tremendous effect on organisms and so on. So there may be energies that we're not fully aware of that we haven't really come to understand, of gravity for that matter, you know. But at first, when I heard the Josel story, I wasn't inclined to believe any of it. It just sounded like nonsense. But there are some other hydrogen from water technologies that seem to involve very minute percentages of gas to, for instance, enrich the burn of gasoline or diesel. There's a company in Colorado that's manufacturing a booster, and it only puts out about a liter per hour of gas, which, when you consider the volume of air that's going into an internal combustion engine in an hour, the cubic feet of air, a liter of hydrogen per hour is nothing. And yet they're claiming a 3 mile per gallon increase in an SUV from that liter per hour. So it tells you that there's more to this than meets the eye when it comes to perhaps even things like the Josel, that although it may not seem to make sense that it could run an engine, there are people who claim that they have done so. And, you know, I don't want to be too skeptical because I personally haven't disproved it, and so I'm not going to be like the Mythbusters, for instance, that go out of their way to disprove alternative energy technologies that they really haven't even replicated properly themselves. I'm trying to keep an open mind. And
James, really quick before we go back to Todd, I just want to talk to him quickly about his website. We've got just a couple minutes left on the show. You run a radio show every week. What's the URL of that show?
What's my what?
Don't you do a radio show?
I try to get it in as often as I can. Unfortunately, it's not always easy getting a guest. I guess you've experienced that too. I've had a program running now for just over a year.
What's the website?
It's actually a blog talk radio program, which I found out from Ken Rasmussen that anyone can get a radio program going for free on blog talk radio, which is really quite an amazing technology. But and that's what caused me to jump in. I thought, well, why not? I've got enough connections to go ahead and interview some people. And it seems like the more the merrier. You know, there's a lot of information out there. It needs to be brought to the public's attention. And many.
What's the name of the show?
Well, it's just from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. If you go to blogtalkradio.com and just do a word search on their site there for water fuel, my programs will come up.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. I do want to take a minute to just get the URL of
Todd Hathaway. Well, we're looking forward to seeing whatever you can bring out.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, too. Y'all take care.
We've been talking to Todd Hathaway. He used to be with the New Energy Congress and still is associated through his wife, who's active there. And his website, Green Salon, is where you can find out more about this event at Jarboe's Mill. We'll be putting up a page at PesWiki about it as well, and we'll probably run a news story at PESN about this event coming up on June 28th or 29th. We thank you for joining us. This has been the Free Energy Now radio show.
Been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Your Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.